Here's today's guest host, Marie Osborne.
And welcome into Focus. So glad you're with us this afternoon. Thankfully, the weather is starting to cooperate a little bit. It's trying really hard. We've got these fireworks tonight. That's what we're talking about. It's going to be a red, white, and blue extravaganza along the riverfront. That's why Paul W. is not here in this spot with you today. He's getting ready for all the fun that is going to be unfolding tonight. The show, by the way, starts at 7 o'clock tonight for the fireworks and runs until fireworks time at 10 p.m. But we're going to have a lot more about this coming up in a couple of minutes. Mike Parsons, of course, our producer. Mike, hopefully you had a great weekend.
Oh, yeah. It was nice. I got a little Father's Day gift from the dog. That was nice. I don't know how she got to the store, but...
Trudy has her own credit card.
She does.
I heard she has an Amex card with, what is it, the gold one that has like, you know, or the platinum one that has unlimited?
Yeah, I try to get her to contribute on bills, but that's a no-go.
Oh, no.
And then, of course, we remembered my late father and celebrated my father-in-law, so.
Yeah, and it's always good to remember our dads who aren't here, of course, anymore, but they're, you know, they're obviously always with us, so what a great remembrance, and of course, remembering Chelsea's dad as well.
Danielle. Oh, he's still with us.
He's, right, yeah, yeah. So you remembered him in a big way because
yeah,
he's there.
I remember the burgers he grilled us yesterday.
What? It's John grilled burgers yesterday, too.
Well, it's funny because we offered to take him out to dinner.
Yeah.
It's like you don't want to grill for us on Father's Day, but that's, you know, it's what he wanted to do. So,
you know, I have to say, after a certain point in life and your kids are grown like that, I just would rather just sit at home, have a nice cocktail, do something on the grill, sit around and talk. To me, that's much better than trying to get out.
Yeah, because you can sit around and talk longer in your own backyard than if you're at a restaurant waiting for them to clear the table.
Yeah, and they need to move those tables, especially on a day like Father's Day where they've got a lot going on. Danielle Mason, good weekend too?
Yeah, it was all right.
Oh.
I did the stuff.
You did the stuff?
Yeah.
Father's Day stuff?
We had an early dinner and then I went to work. So thank you to everyone who bought pizza yesterday because you helped fund my groceries this week.
Oh, well, awesome. Good, 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 good. All right, Danielle Mason, of course. What does Paul call you? The Queen of the Switches?
Correct.
Yeah, that's an interesting name. I like it. It's got a good ring to it. All right. We, like I said, tonight's fireworks night. Mike, the show starts at 7, right? Runs until 10.
Our show with Paul W. starts at 7, and we're going back to carrying the music for the fireworks. And
oh, good.
People always ask me, why are you carrying fireworks on the radio? It's not the fireworks themselves. It's the music. So if you're, you know, out watching the fireworks somewhere, you can tune into 760 WJR and, get the full experience.
And it's very choreographed, so it isn't just like, you know, you throw some tunes on. It's very choreographed to what you're watching. So it's very cool. Very cool. All right. So that's gonna be a lot of fun tonight. We're gonna be talking with Tony Michaels, the parade company, as well as the CEO of the Michigan Thanksgiving Day Parade Foundation, Linda Forte. A little bit later on in the show, you know, they've got all the details for us coming up. Big news this afternoon. Dusty May is headed to the NBA. He led Michigan basketball to the 2026 National Championship this past spring. It's going to be the Dallas Mavericks coach. That's where he's going. And, Mike, you were very – I think a lot of people were taken aback by this announcement.
Yeah, I was surprised when I heard this. I'm not that dialed into the college basketball world, but people who are said they're not surprised that Dusty May is going to the NBA because I guess it's been no secret that's where he wanted to end up. But the timing is shocking because, like you said, coming off a national championship, he was at Michigan for 2 years – and it looks like there's a $5 million buyout, but I would imagine that the money that Dusty May is going to be getting paid in the NBA is going to make that not that big of a deal.
Yeah.
And not too long ago, the jump from college to pros was a lot bigger than it was now because, you know, now the college game is becoming more and more like the pro game.
Right.
And, you know, recruiting isn't as big of a deal. the way these big name college basketball programs are built are a lot like the NBA, so those differences aren't as glaring as they once were.
That was, you brought that up because that was one of the things I was wondering, because you said the timing is a little odd right after. Mm-hmm. I mean, they just won the championship and so on. But I wonder if that is going to be an advantage for recruiting for U of M or a disadvantage for them. So I was curious about that.
Well, and the thing is, I mean, theoretically, a lot of these teams are completely different from year to year. You're not seeing as many kids staying for 3-4 years as they used to. Yeah. So it might not be as painful as of an exit as it might have been 5 to 10 years ago.
You know who's going to have a lot to say about this? Ryan Armani.
Has anyone checked on him?
Is he okay? Yes. You know what? Someone needs to text him. Make sure he's okay. Ryan, are
Marie,
you okay?
You might be doing 2-4 if Ryan can't bring himself to come in.
Yeah, I can't wait. Well, we're going to talk to him about it. Well, if he's here, we're going to talk to him about
He'll
it.
He'll be here. He's a pro.
He is a pro. He's always a pro.
And everyone be extra nice to him today.
Yeah, but I know he's going to have a lot to say about that. Alan Greenspan passed away, the former Federal Reserve Chair. He had a big impact on U.S. economic policy because he was the head for two decades. And he was 100 years old when he died. His wife was NBC correspondent Andrea Mitchell.
Yeah, I didn't know that before today.
Oh, yeah, I did. And you and I were talking earlier because you mentioned, wow, they must have been a power couple. Mm-hmm. And let me tell you, they were. They were the D.C. power couple forever. And Andrea is still at it. I think you told me she's 79.
She's 79, and she doesn't look 79, but she doesn't sound 79.
That's the most important thing. She doesn't sound 79. And she's right in the thick of it every single day. And by the way, the her beat in D.C. is a tough one. You've got to have your elbows up at all times. So kudos to Andrea Mitchell, and of course our condolences to her. And that is a notable passing.
And then another one that broke just before the show, Marie. I didn't know if you heard about this, but legendary music mogul Clive Davis passed away at 94.
Yeah, Clive Davis was another force to be reckoned with in the music industry. I want to mention this story because it's such a good news story that we have to talk about it for a minute. So one of the best stories coming out of the World Cup is the city of Boston was overtaken by the Scottish fans due to World Cup. And Boston has been awesome about it. They loved it. Bars were running out of beers. There were chants and songs were on the street and on the subway. The Red Sox hosted a special Scotland jersey giveaway at Fenway, and it was awesome. And they took the Boston Globe. There was a full page ad in the Boston Globe saying, "Dear Tartan Army, thank you for the laughter, the bagpipes, the memories. World Cup will move on. So will the songs, but we'll never forget the joy you brought our city."
Yeah, I've loved this story. And you know what? They drank all the beer, but you haven't heard of any problems. So
none.
You know, come back anytime, Scottish football fans.
Not a one. And I've traveled to a lot of places, but the trip we took to Scotland is one that remains one of our favorite. And it was because of the people there. I mean, obviously the history and the landscape and all that was awesome. But the people were so awesome. And that's what we'll never forget. And clearly we've fallen in love with Tartan, the Tartan Army.
And it's great to see somebody come into America through new eyes and really enjoy it. It seems like the Scottish football fans have really enjoyed Boston, and Boston has really enjoyed them.
And they are not going to forget it. Well, now they're moving on to Miami. And Scotland national team said, you know, as we move on to Miami,
they'll drink all the beer there.
Yeah. And what do they drink down in Miami? Mimosas or probably something a little more tropical, a little tropical.
Yeah, I can see margaritas being big down there.
Yeah, something along that line. But they a heartfelt thank you to the city and people of Boston. So it's been a very sweet story in a day and age where we don't run across a lot of stories like that. These people should be in charge of international relations. That's what I say. have them clear up this issue with the bridge with Canada. They'll take care of it. All right, let's move on. Jonathan Savage coming your way next. We're going to talk about Vice President J.D. Vance and also the changes coming to British government. We'll have more on that on Focus for you with Paul W. Smith coming up next. British Prime Minister Keir Starmer officially announcing his resignation after months of speculation. Starmer speaking in London and reflecting his time as the Prime Minister.
Walking up this street 2 years ago was the proudest moment of my life. A new Labour government, the first in 14 years. A page in our country's history turned after years of disappointment.
Fellow Labour Party member Andy Burnham is now considered his likely successor as Prime Minister. Starmer also voicing his support for Burnham during his announcement on Monday. And also from overseas, high-level talks between Iran and the United States resulted in a lot of good progress, according to Vice President J.D. Vance as he left Switzerland this morning after the two sides agreed on a roadmap toward reaching a final deal to end the war. We want to bring in Jonathan Savage with us, Fox News correspondent, WJR contributor. Jonathan, thank you so much for joining us. And we were going to be talking with you about, of course, J.D. Vance and the talks, but the story with the British Prime Minister broke. So a couple of very big international stories today.
Yeah, not a quiet Monday morning over here, that's for sure.
No, for sure. So let's start. Let's start in the UK for a moment. So Keir Starmer is going to be stepping down, and we hear that this Labour Party member, this former or fellow Labour Party member, Andy Burnham, is considered the likely successor. Are you hearing that speculation as well? And I understand, I've heard him described as charismatic. Was that a word people would use?
Certainly more charismatic than Keir Starmer. He's got a bit more of a sort of down-to-earth, man-of-the-people kind of vibe. He's a big sports fan. He goes out jogging, and he doesn't wear a shirt. He wears a T-shirt or open neck. He's a bit more of that kind of politician, a bit more authentic, people would say, than Keir Starmer, who is perhaps seen as managerial, a bit stuffy, a bit very much political establishment. But the whole sort of choreography of recent days has been quite remarkable to watch. Keir Starmer's been under pressure for months, growing personal unpopularity, growing unpopularity of his party and his government, all the while described as the king in the north. Andy Burnham, the mayor of Manchester, used to be in government under previous leaders. He left national politics to be mayor of the city of Manchester. But everyone knows that he really wanted to be prime minister. And in recent times, people were wondering, what's he going to do? And then, how can he become prime minister if he's mayor of Manchester? Well, he seemed to persuade a member of parliament to give up their seat, to resign, so that Andy Burnham could have a shot at coming back to London to stand for election. And in a special election last Thursday, Andy Burnham got his wish. He won that special election and was re-elected to Westminster. And that was the moment Keir Starmer must have known the game was up. Andy Burnham, popular guy, clearly wanted to be prime minister, got his seat in parliament over the weekend. Keir Starmer thought about it and decided this morning he would come out and announce his resignation, knowing he could not be Andy Burnham. And just hours after this speech on the steps of Downing Street, what should happen? The train carrying Andy Burnham from Manchester to London to Westminster to be sworn in as a member of parliament arrived. Helicopters carrying the train journey on news channels. And then his car journey through the streets to Westminster. Totally remarkable theatre. And it now seems absolutely inevitable that Andy Burnham will be the next prime minister, even though there's supposed to be a contest.
Thank you so much for describing that, because that really, really kind of sums it up. That kind of fanfare for this guy who really hasn't even been named prime minister yet. What do you think the differences will be between these two leaders?
Well, that's the big thing. I mean, to be honest with you, Marie, Andy Burnham, he's been out of the national picture for so long, no one's exactly sure what he is, other than he's not Keir Starmer, and yet he's likely to get this kind of coronation. He's affable, like we're saying. He's good with people, comes over as kind of normal. He's dropped hints that he is perhaps a little bit more left-wing than Keir Starmer. These are just hints. But he's not had a chance to test his theories in public. And if there's no challenger to him, if he is crowned as prime minister without having to go through a campaign against a challenger so they could test out their theories, they could make clear to the public exactly who they're going to be as Prime Minister. A lot of people will wonder, does he really have a mandate? Should he really be Prime Minister? Mm. And that could damage his potential legitimacy.
And one more question on this point. How is he going to be in terms of getting along with President Trump if indeed he does take over as the Prime Minister? Because, you know, President Trump doesn't hold back. So what are your thoughts on that?
I know that is something which is going to be a really important question, because for over a year, Keir Starmer was considered the Trump whisperer, along with Mark Rutte, two European politicians who they flattered the president, they avoided public disagreements. Keir Starmer managed to get an early trade deal for the United Kingdom in doing so. But then over the weekend, it was clear that their relationship had totally disintegrated in 2026. It was clear that Donald Trump had had enough of Keir Starmer, and probably the same was true in the reverse. We don't know what Andy Burnham is going to be like with President Trump, but we do know he will be asked about that very early on. What do you think of President Trump? How will you relate to him? How will you make sure that you have a strong relationship with the United States?
I can't wait to hear what he says. If this indeed comes to pass, it'll be interesting to see. All right, so these talks between Iran and the United States, J.D. Vance, the vice president, saying, look, things look pretty good, a lot of good progress. What is your take on how this has gone? This is still not a signed, sealed, delivered deal, really.
It's not. And it was not meant to be after the first weekend, of course. There's a 60-day negotiating period that they're now in, a 60-day extension to the ceasefire. President Trump has said that if he doesn't like the way things are looking after those 60 days, he is perfectly prepared to go back in with the guns and the bombs and go back on attacking Iran until he does get the deal that he wants. But Vice President Vance says that over the weekend in talks, they laid a very good foundation for a successful final deal. We don't know exactly the direction of this. We don't know what Iran has or hasn't agreed to. But he did come up with some suggestions. He said they built a mechanism for keeping the Strait of Hormuz open.
Right.
They built a mechanism for stopping shooting if they start it. And Iran's agreed to get nuclear inspectors back into the country. So that could be a major step.
And also, there's also Lebanon in the middle of all this here. And J.D. Vance saying that part is still a work in progress. So that's what we had on that. Jonathan Savage, always a pleasure to talk with you. Fox News correspondent, WJR contributor. Have a great afternoon.
Thank you, Marie.
And we'll continue here on Focus.
Sitting in today, Marie Osborne.
All right, tonight's one of the area's most beloved family nights. The 68th edition of the Fort Fireworks, set to light up the skies over the Detroit River starting at 10 o'clock tonight. From Belle Isle to the Plaza, Hart Plaza, thousands are expected to pack in parks and at viewing parties around the city. And we wanted to check in with the person in charge. Tony Michaels of the Parade Company, president and CEO, is joining us, along with Linda Forte, chair of the Michigan Thanksgiving Day Parade Foundation. Tony and Linda, glad you could take a few minutes of time out of what I'm sure is a busy day for you.
Oh, it's great to be here. And I've got to tell you, to have Linda on with me, this is just one of the classiest ladies you're ever going to meet. Storied career at Comerica, and now the chair of the Parade Foundation. We could not be prouder, and to put on this big day for the city.
So, Linda, are you sort of shadowing Tony a little bit to kind of see how an old pro really, and I don't mean old, I just mean, you know, old in terms of experience here.
A seasoned pro.
Yeah, a seasoned pro. Thank you. That's why you're in charge. Okay. So are you kind of shadowing here and getting some ideas on how the show is really run?
Well, yes, this will be, because as the newly installed chair, this is my first year with that wonderful honor. It will be shadowing Tony a little bit this year to get the inside scoop and the inside story. Yeah. But let me just say this, Marie. I've been to the fireworks many, many, many years in a row. So I know the view from the perspective of being able to enjoy our treasure.
You know what? You said it beautifully. It is a treasure. Tony, I think you know that this event, in the hearts and minds of thousands upon thousands upon thousands of people in the metro area, That's what it is. It's like a jewel that you hold in your heart, the memories. I remember going with my parents. I remember bringing my kids when they were little. The kids ended up bringing their fiancés and then their kids. I mean, it's just this wonderful tradition that we have here.
You know, Marie, we look at things from the parade company standpoint that everything we do is owned by the people. So it's our job to do it bigger and better every single year, and none of that can be done without the great support that we get. In this case, the Ford Motor Company, Ford Philanthropy, run by Mary Culler, the head of philanthropy in the Ford family, they're always there for us, along with so many others. We're just so fortunate to have the great support, and it's our job to keep doing it bigger and better, everything that we do, every single year.
This year's theme is Detroit Go for Launch. Tony, why did you land on that theme?
Well, one of the highlights of the show, and I get more calls about this if we ever screw it up, right before the show, and Linda knows this, we go, you know, right before it's barge one, go, barge two, ready, barge three, go, WDIV, go, WJR, go. It just, they name everybody, and then boom, parade company, launch, or fire. And we just, it's like everyone looks forward to that moment, and then boom, it just goes boom. In the sky.
I have to tell you there, I've brought some of my family who live overseas to the rooftop party in the past. They were just gobsmacked. I mean, it's just the most amazing experience to be there. But frankly, Belle Isle, Hart Plaza, I don't care. One of the high rises, I don't care where you are. It is a night, of course, to remember. Tony, would you, for everyone's sake, just quickly go over. I know you've really worked hard on security for tonight to make sure this is a safe and happy event for everybody.
Well, we work together with Chief Todd Bettis and his entire team, Homeland Security, Border Security, Michigan State Police, you name it. They have come together and collaborated. It's just amazing. And tonight, so we urge people to come down. City is safe. City's great. And if you come down and really, really want to understand this show the best way possible, bring your radio, bring your boombox, and play the music broadcast on WJR tonight. The entire show is choreographed to that. So I do the music track. I work with Patrick Barreau from Zambelli, and he choreographs. The guy is amazing. But you want to take that in.
Yeah, and Mike Parsons was just telling us, our producer, that, yeah, we're broadcasting the music, and there's a reason for that because it is so tightly choreographed with the fireworks themselves. Linda, do you have a favorite spot to watch the fireworks?
Oh, you know, Marie, you mentioned the time you had with your visitors. That rooftop space is really nice, but other than that, I have watched it in other locations as well, including Belle Isle, including even just north of Belle Isle. And there's a good view no matter where you are, as long as you're following that North Star towards where the fireworks are being launched. Let me just say, this morning I had the opportunity I had a service commitment downtown. I was coming back down east, driving east on Jefferson Avenue past Belle Isle. And then I paused because there was a long line of people gathered with their trunks open, with chairs, and you could see it was grilled food and the whole nine yards, waiting to get in, waiting for the state police to open the gates to Belle Isle. And it made me smile because that's what community is all about. They were just waiting to gather and have a good time, be in position to see the fireworks go.
Absolutely. And that is always, it is a great spot. Belle Isle is always a great spot for a number of different reasons to watch the fireworks. I'd like to ask both of you very quickly before we let you go, you know, a lot of organizations, a lot of civic events like this don't last 68 years. So, Tony, I'll ask you first, what is the secret to success here to make this event still new, still wonderful, still relevant in 2026?
Well, not only do we have this at 68 years, but this year's parade will be 100 coming down Woodward.
Yes.
The greatest reason for all of this is to make things bigger and better every single year and make it about the people. Make it about entertainment. Make it about something that they want to be a part of, that they want to enjoy, that their kids, their grandkids, you name it, everybody wants to be a part of it. In my opinion, that's the secret, and that's how we run the parade company.
And Linda, because again, you're chairing the Michigan Thanksgiving Day Parade Foundation, 100 years. What is it about? Is it like Tony said, you make it about the people, not yourself?
Absolutely. And when it's about the people, that means it's about families. It's about young people. It's about children. It's about pulling the generations through. That's one of the reasons, Marie, I believe it's lasted 100 years is because the generations who are able to enjoy the parade are pulled through by their families, by the community, and they see it year after year. And for most people that I've met and I mentioned parade, an immediate smile comes to their face.
Yeah.
It facilitates the community spirit.
Tony Michaels, Parade Company President and CEO, and Linda Forte, Chair of the Michigan Thanksgiving Parade Foundation. Thank you for all the work you do for all of us to have all these fabulous family memories and a great history. These are the things that we remember 20, 30 years from now. Have a great night to both of you.
Thank you. Enjoy.
Thank you.
And again, you will hear it all live right here on WJR. We're going to start at 7 o'clock. Paul W. Smith, of course, is hosting, as he always is, until 10. That's the time of the fireworks. And then at that time, keep that radio on. You're going to hear specially choreographed music with your fireworks. And it starts at 10 p.m. tonight. And keep tuned right here to WJR. Rich Lozinski will have a lot of the street closings for you throughout the afternoon as it progresses. We'll be right back here on Focus on WJR. Here's your chance to win a trip to see two country music superstars, Jason Aldean and Luke Bryan in Vegas. Double the hits, one unforgettable night. We've got your flights, hotel, concert tickets covered. The Double Down Tour, Aldean and Bryan co-headlining with special guests John Party and Chase Matthews. All live under the neon lights provided by BBR Music Group. Text this hour's national keyword, BOOTS, to 95819. That's BOOTS, B-O-O-T-S, to 95819. They'll text you back to confirm your entry. Data and messaging rates apply. Please don't text and drive. You can get all the official rules and more info at WJR.com. Please, we hope you enjoy that. All right, Prince Harry and Meghan are set to return to Britain next month alongside their two children, with the family accepting an offer from the king to stay at the royal residence, at a royal residence. The king extended both accommodation and security arrangements to the Sussexes, demonstrating his wish to spend more time with his grandchildren. Oh, I've got a lot to say about that. All right, 7-year-old Prince Archie and 5-year-old Princess Lilibet will accompany their parents on what represents the family's first joint trip to the UK in 4 years. Joining us to talk about this is Brittany Provance, Editor-in-Chief of Royal News Network. Hi, Brittany. Glad you could join us again here on WJR.
Yes, thank you so much, Marie.
So, as an aside, I said, boy, I've got a lot to say about this. I have grown children who live out of town. And when they want to come for a visit or when they announce they're going to come for a visit, there's never any question they're going to be staying with us or that we're going to be seeing them. I just can't get over that this is making headlines, that the king invited Harry and Meghan and the kids to stay in a royal residence. Isn't that what a grandfather is supposed to be doing?
It is, and it's what he does, Marie, every time. Every time Harry has come into town, because most of the time it's without Meghan and the kids, he is offered a royal residence to stay in, usually reportedly Buckingham Palace, and he always declines. So this is what Charles does every time. It's not a surprise. And if Harry and Meghan are coming, like, we know Harry definitely for sure, Meghan and the kids a bit up in the air, But a royal residence will be offered to them. The question always is, will they accept?
So we don't know that yet. So really, that's what we don't know.
Yes, we don't know a couple of things because there's been a lot of really kind of crazy reporting about this particular situation. Some outlets are saying Charles helped with security. Others are saying, no, he didn't. People are saying that they have a residence secured. Others are saying they didn't. So this is quite an evolving, chaotic story. But I believe Harry and Meghan with the kids are coming in July. This is the one-year kickoff for the Invictus Games. And so we'll see how this plays out. But it seems for sure that they're coming, and most likely Charles will be able to pay them, or they will be able to pay Charles a short visit.
The Invictus Games, of course, is something that Harry's been long involved in, and it's a really great nonprofit. So that's an interesting side note on all this. But I'm sorry, Brittany. It just seems to me that, like, wouldn't a grandfather be all about having these kids around, seeing them more often? I was thinking as I was looking at the fact that we were going to be interviewing, and I thought to myself, gee, I wonder, do they FaceTime? As a grandparent, these are the things that are important to me.
Yes, of course. And I think Charles would absolutely love and adore to see his grandchildren, all his grandchildren. But his life is definitely quite unique. Anywhere he goes in the world, there's a security apparatus that follows him. When he's in the States, we actually augment his security, us through the State Department. And so for him to, let's say, go out and visit California with them would be actually quite a logistical nightmare. So them being in the UK allows for this, but Charles also has a very full schedule. Mm. And so it's one of those things where a royal family is just different than the average family. You don't just wander into somebody's residence. There's schedules and private secretaries and all that who help manage their lives.
And you know what? We look at it, or I look at it and think, oh my gosh, that's so weird or so unusual. But really, when you grow up around this, I read Harry's book, and he talked a lot about having grown up like this. And so this is par for the course. You mentioned security, that security will be, or that's still kind of up in the air, whether security will be offered to the Sussexes. That has been a big bone of contention for Harry and Meghan, because they, one of the reasons reportedly that they left the UK was that they did not feel safe there.
Yes, and when it comes to security, this has been a long case of Harry's. And basically what would have happened for Harry and Meghan is that when they were about and thinking about leaving the UK, they were told that Archie would not get security. And this is actually not a surprise. It's really only the principals of the royal family, which be the king and queen and the Waleses and their children, who get full-time security. As what happens in royal families generally is that when a member marries or has children, you kind of get bumped further and further down the line. The Duke of Gloucester was born in fifth in line to the throne, and now I think he's somewhere in the 20s. And so this is kind of the natural evolution. But when it comes to Harry's security here in the UK, he did lose his case. However, anytime he visits, he can give them 30 days notice. They'll evaluate his security risk and determine then if he gets, let's say, round the clock police protection, which is paid for by the taxpayer. So kind of the contention for the government and Harry is that the taxpayers would be paying for this. And obviously, nobody really wants to do that, as he is not a working royal. He doesn't represent the state or the monarchy anymore. And he's just doing personal things.
As you well know, this morning, big news was that the Prime Minister Starmer was going to be giving up his administration, his prime ministership, and there's going to be a new prime minister in the UK. How does that impact the royal family at all? I know, you know, it's obviously they have a different form of government there than we do, clearly, but I'm sure the royal family is interested in this development.
Oh, they are. As when it comes to how the British system works, the head of state is King Charles, and the head of government would be whoever the prime minister is. And in the United States, that's one role, which is the president, but in the UK, it's two. So the monarchy acts as very much this continuity throughout this chaos. But even in the four short years of King Charles's reign, he will have four prime ministers, which is insane to think about. It shows sort of a lot of instability. Keir Starmer had lost some support within his own party, and that sort of resulted in his ousting, and he wasn't particularly popular. And so lots of chaos going on. And of course, that does bleed into the monarchy and what they do, because they act as basically an extension of Keir Starmer, especially during state functions like a state visit.
So, right.
It's a very contentious situation.
Yeah, so this is another a layer of intrigue here with all the developments this morning. All right, Brittany Provance, she is the editor-in-chief of Royal News Network. Always a pleasure to talk with you, Brittany. Thank you for coming on board.
Yes, thank you so much, Marie.
And we'll continue here on Focus on WJR. Paul W. Smith gearing up for the big fireworks show tonight at the Riverfront. I'm Marie Osborne. We'll be right back.
Here's today's guest host, Marie Osborne.
And we're back. We want to remind everybody tonight is fireworks night here in Detroit. We had a great conversation with Tony Michaels a little while ago talking about all the great stuff that really this means to the Detroit area. Mike, you've got your fingers in this, of course, being a producer for Paul W. Smith. Reason Paul isn't here today to do the Focus show is he's getting, I think he's doing his neck exercises so that he strengthens his neck when he has to toss it back to look in the air.
Right.
Am I right about that?
Yeah, that's a very important step that people often skip.
And to their detriment, of course. So, you know what? The cloud cover, though, is awfully pesky, at least down here at the Fisher Building that, you know, we're looking out. I hope that clears up, right?
Yeah, I think this cloud cover is high enough that it won't block the fireworks. But, yeah, I was looking at the forecast, and there's no rain as of right now, but it would make us feel a little bit better if these clouds cleared away.
I know. I didn't see rain in the forecast either. I don't know that that's what the problem is right now. We just need to get rid of some of these clouds. They've moved the baseball game up. The Tigers are playing tonight. I think they moved that up at 6 o'clock. So that'll kind of help ease congestion for those of you that are going down to the to watch the fireworks tonight. So let's go over some of the do's and don'ts tonight. Of course, people are already down there right now enjoying themselves. We want to get a review here. The curfew, minors 17 and under have a curfew in effect from 8 p.m. Monday until 6 a.m. Tuesday. And this is the area bounded by the Detroit River, 3rd Street, the Lodge Freeway, Fisher Freeway, the extension of the Fisher Freeway East to include Gratiot, Verner, Shane, Atwater, and Aretha Franklin Amphitheater. So just beware, minors under 17, you've got a curfew 8 p.m. until tomorrow morning at 6 a.m. Just be aware of that, because they'll take you down. Your parents are going to have to come and get you. And by the way, it is $250.
Oof.
That's the fine. Yeah, if your kid is out violating curfew, it's going to be a fine. So you can, if you're headed to the park, camping chairs and blankets, of course, are good things. You know, you need snacks, and non-alcoholic beverages are allowed. Tents, canopies, pets, alcohol, weapons, personal or consumer fireworks, flames or cooking, is not allowed. So just beware of that. Don't think that you can, you know, join in with the fireworks. Let's leave that to the pros tonight. Okay. Are you hearing fireworks in your neighborhood? Mike, at all?
I heard some last night, but not yet. Now, I'm lucky because normally the fireworks in my neighborhood start about 9, but they're done by 11. So whoever's setting off our fireworks are doing it very, very respectfully.
Yeah, ours have on occasion gone way past, you know, the expiration date.
Yeah, 4th of July is a different thing. Those go all night, and it's neighborhoods all around our neighborhood, but for the most part, they've got it wrapped up by 11.
How does Trudy do with the fireworks?
You know, we're very lucky. She is not fazed by fireworks or thunderstorms.
Neither Bee. Bee's very good. I mean, she does not like, you know, now if a dog or a squirrel came across
yes.
the yard,
yeah,
watch out.
Yes.
But, the booms don't bother her, but I do know so many dogs where it's tough.
Well, and the thing, we like to go out and we like to watch fireworks, so we feel a lot better knowing she's home alone and not afraid of fireworks. If she didn't like fireworks, we'd probably just stay home with her
oh.
all of July.
My brother has a dog We call him a cast member of the Game of Thrones because he's huge. I mean, I think he stands at least 3 feet high.
Wow.
And he's 150 pounds. They got him as a Labradoodle from a, I don't remember where they got him, but they told, oh, yeah, this is a Labradoodle, adorable puppy. And he's this giant dog who's the kindest, most loving dog ever. But he is afraid of fireworks.
Oh.
And it's, I mean, he tries to get in the bathtub.
Yeah.
It's really, really sad. So they have to get, they have to give him medication. It's bad. It's bad. So, yeah, tough.
A thunder shirt.
Yeah, a thunder. I need a thunder shirt sometimes.
That sounds
soothing. We should wear them for work. Like when we come to work, put on your thunder shirt.
WJR branded thunder shirts.
I think for everybody, for the whole staff. Here we are.
Christmas is only 6 months away.
I'll work on that. All right, I'll work on that.
You can knit them.
I could knit them. I didn't even think about that.
I would wear mine proudly.
All right, I've got my work cut out for me. Let's talk about e-bikes for a second here. You know, last week we reported about this 33-year-old man on an e-bike who was hit and killed in Ferndale, and that involved an Oakland County Road Commission truck. That's being investigated, but over the weekend, an 87-year-old man was killed in Grand Blanc. He crashed into a car that was passing him on the road. Farmington apparently is going to have a meeting tonight to discuss the possibility of issuing new rules for e-bikes. I understand Mackinac Island, clearly because this is their mode of transportation, bikes. They've got some pretty specific rules about e-bikes on the island. I think this is an emerging thing that more communities are going to really have to get on top of, because these e-bikes are, I don't want to say they're dangerous because that's irresponsible. They're not dangerous. They could be used dangerously, but this is a serious issue.
Yeah, and I'm looking this up. I guess e-bikes go anywhere from 20 to 28 miles an hour, so that's, you know, full speed through a neighborhood.
Yeah, let's round that out to 30.
Okay.
So yesterday I was running errands, and I was in Birmingham, and I was on Lincoln, and there's a bike lane on both. So they just redid Lincoln some time ago, and this is through a residential area, I might add. And they have bike lanes on both sides, and you can also park cars in that lane, too. It's kind of strange.
Yeah.
But, okay, that's how it works. So I'm driving, and of course, it's a beautiful day yesterday. Lots of people were out on their bikes. But I noticed as I was driving along, and I was driving well below the speed limit because I saw so many people on their bikes, these two women on bikes, and boy, they were going fast. But I thought, you know, some people are good on their bikes and they go fast. But the closer I got, I realized, oh, they're on e-bikes. And they kept coming out into the traffic lane to get around these cars. And if you weren't watching, that would, you know, you really had to watch these two in particular because they were coming out into the traffic lane. And then as I got on to close to Southfield, which is a kind of a big intersection,
yeah,
there,
it's huge.
They came around in back of me and did a left turn. I mean, through the light, they had the right of way and everything, but they were going really fast. And I just think people don't expect to see that, and that's why people are getting hit on these bikes.
Yeah, and I've never liked the way that these bike lanes are constructed, too, where it's like the road, and then there's like where you can park, and then you got the bike lanes kind of in the middle there. I don't know. Couldn't you sacrifice some sidewalk space and make that into a bike lane or something? That sounds safer than putting it kind of in the middle of traffic like they are.
Well, both my son and my husband are big bike people. I mean, they ride really like racing bikes and so on. And they always say that it's more dangerous on the sidewalk than it is on the street. They'll take their chances on the street because the sidewalk can be a whole nother ball of wax. But this is, I mean, this, we have now these two reports. This is in less than a week. We've now had these two reports. This is going to be a growing problem here. You know, they're becoming more affordable. Now, I will tell you, both of the women that I talked about here who were riding their e-bikes, And they weren't being reckless or anything. I'm just saying that you really had to watch what they were doing, or else there could have been a problem. They were all wearing their helmets. So thankfully, because I've noticed people not wearing helmets. That's crazy. On an e-bike. You're going 30 miles an hour. You need to put a helmet on. I know. I'll get off my mom's soapbox right now. All right. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about the San Francisco Giants annual Pride Night, causing a bit of controversy. And now the federal government is getting involved. We'll talk about that when we come back. Last week, the San Francisco Giants played their annual Pride Night game with a theme to celebrate Pride Month and the city's LGBTQ+ community. Players were given hats with a special rainbow logo to wear during the game. But three pitchers, Landon Roop, JT Brubaker, and Ryan Walker, sparked controversy when they wore the Pride Night caps, but they inscribed in pen Genesis 9:12-16. The Bible verse refers to the rainbow as a sign of God's covenant with all of Earth's living creatures, a verse that some LGBTQ+ activists say has been used to denounce the use of the rainbow as an LGBTQ+ symbol. Well, now the U.S. Department of Justice has launched a probe into Major League Baseball, suggesting that MLB may have violated civil rights policies for apparently issuing warnings to those three players. Let's bring in Todd Flood, managing partner at Flood Law, and also the host of Behind the Bench here on WJR, talk a little bit about this. Hi, Todd.
Hey. Hi, Marie. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, this could have all passed, but now we have the Justice Department looking into this. So.
Yeah. No, it's kind of crazy. Actually, after Groff, that's a Supreme Court case, this case really is not going to go anywhere. It was referred to the EEOC, the Employment and Equal Opportunity Commission, and here there was no adverse action by Major League Baseball. They just gave them a warning. There was no suspension, no lost pay, no fine. This is a Title VII discrimination claim potentially. And I don't see it happening ultimately. So the fact of the matter is that the MLB realistically will come out on top on this. And it seems to me you just got to take the politics out of this. What's the law? And not a political event. And the whole thing revolves around, were they denied their civil rights by freedom of expression for, their accommodation, or was there some sort of accommodation that needed to be made? This is not a First Amendment case because MLB is a private company or a private entity. So, I just don't see it. I think ultimately there won't be any harm or foul. They didn't ask. None of these players asked, hey, can you make an accommodation for me, Marie? Can you do something for me here because I want to put this on my logo on my hat or this or that and the other. They didn't ask for that. They don't want that. And ultimately, there was no penalty to these guys. What was what's the boo-boo? They didn't get a suspension, and they're making their millions of dollars.
Right. They were just, if you will, reprimanded in a way, right?
Right. They got a warning.
Yeah, warning.
Don't put your stuff on, your religious beliefs on your hat. That in and of itself falls within, a Title VII potential claim. The Supreme Court in Groff, he worked for the UPS, and he wanted to take Sundays off. And Amazon was saying, hey, we're delivering on Sundays. And he wanted to observe the Sabbath. And ultimately, he won on that, but 9-0. One in the United States Supreme Court. But that was a different thing. He was asking for an accommodation. And here in this particular case, to put something on your hat or on your shoes or whatever the case may be, the Major League Baseball has not been, didn't fine them. So I just don't see this case going anywhere.
Yeah. To me, it was a thing of, look, if you're asked to wear a uniform at work, which, of course, professional ball players are,
right.
There's going to be rules from your company on what you can and cannot do to that uniform. And so you just have to follow those rules or you'll be in trouble, however that would work. You know, I didn't see, I just wondered how this compares to when, you know, we do pink out the park, you know, for breast cancer. I know the players don't wear a hat necessarily then, but there's sometimes they'll wear things on their jerseys or on their hats indicating things like breast cancer awareness or any number of different things. So it's not uncommon to have ball players asked to wear something like this.
Right. So when you'll see that and professional sports all over the place, football, whatever the case may be, with cancer, breast cancer, things of that sort. Those are already, passed through the league and through the team that recognizes that, and there's permission given or granted, you know, to support certain things. And, we have children with cancer in the NFL. There's times where you'll see the spikes have been, painted within support of, their shoes, within support of a child or whatever the case may be. But
yeah,
football teams, national baseball teams, professional baseball teams, professional sports have already been given, players have been given the green light for those types of, activities to support those just causes. Here, this was more, obviously they didn't have permission to do it through the league, and it was more of a religious slant. And, these players, had they gotten something other than a warning, they may have had a claim.
Yeah, but they might have.
Really, they have no boo-boo.
As a lawyer, can you give us an idea, how much time does this take now for the league, for the MLB to get their lawyers on this case, respond to the Department of Justice, and then the Department of Justice has their team? How much money and time is going into this?
So the EEOC will probably take up to a year, 6 months to a year. There is a fast track, but realistically, you won't see that. It will cost taxpayers, for this department to look through it and go through it, a hefty sum. And it cumbers up a plate that should be clean. We shouldn't have to deal with these types of issues if there was no request by the players in and of themselves. But the fact of the matter is, your point is well taken. It will take time away from heavier cases and cost taxpayer dollars.
Yeah, ultimately, it always ends up somehow costing us something, right? Todd Flood, managing partner of Flood Law and the host of Behind the Bench. Todd, it's always fun to talk with you. Thank you so much for talking to us today.
Love talking with you. You take care.
We will. And when we come back, we'll talk a little bit about the call for companies, auto companies here in the Detroit area, to gear up to help build military apparatuses. We'll have that story when we come back.
Sitting in today, Marie Osborne.
And welcome back.
We must be the great arsenal of democracy.
That, of course, Franklin Roosevelt during World War II calling on us, and specifically the Detroit area, to be the arsenal of democracy. We changed history right here in Detroit, and we might see that same thing happening again. Detroit is once again positioning itself as a modern arsenal democracy. The automakers Ford and GM stepping back into the defense spotlight as global conflicts and President Trump's push for expanded manufacturing drive demand for U.S.-made military equipment. Joining us to talk a little bit about that, Paul Eisenstein, editor of Headlight.News. Paul, always a pleasure.
Good to be with you, Marie.
What were your thoughts when you were reading about this, that we may once again be called upon to be I don't know, I don't like to use the phrase, but head of the spear, if you will, for development and expansion in manufacturing of military-made equipment, U.S. military equipment.
It didn't surprise me at all at one level, in that the Detroit manufacturers, number one, have had decades and decades, really more than a century of experience. Remember, they were involved heavily in production of weaponry and the like for World War I, dating back to our involvement in 1917, 18. So this is a historical tie between the Detroit automakers and the Department of Defense, back then the Department of War. The question is exactly what that role will be, and I asked that because the nature of warfare is going to change, as we're seeing. I think one of the things that we didn't properly prepare for in the battle with Iran was the asymmetric element of this war, which we've already been seeing in Ukraine to a high degree. Traditional military doctrine is getting thrown out the window.
Yep.
As things become more and more dependent on things like drones and hypersonic missiles and the like. So, you know, exactly what role Detroit will play perhaps in development of that technology? Question mark. There are some other companies that are based here, including some drone manufacturers, who could very well become involved in what the Department of Defense needs going forward. It's going to be very interesting to watch and see exactly what comes out of this.
When we think of Arsenal Democracy, we think of tanks, right? Rolling off that assembly line. That's kind of mm-hmm. the image that we have. But we're talking about a whole nother type of warfare here, as we have seen, just like you said, evidenced in Ukraine and in the Middle East. My question is, are we ready? Do we have the skills in our workforce? Do we have the workforce with the skills to meet the demands that are going to be needed for this kind of work?
Well, it's interesting. It depends on how you ask that question and what you're referring to. Unfortunately, Trump's war has horribly depleted our stash of weapons, which leaves us incredibly vulnerable. You know, one of the things we have to be worried about is whether China will see an opportunity right now, see us as weak because we've effectively lost the war with Iran, see us as weak and see that our weaponry has been depleted to a large degree. Could this open up the opportunity for them to invade Taiwan? That's an issue that a number of folks I've spoken to are worried about. So we need to build up the weaponry fast. And the question is, could the Department of Defense take advantage of Detroit's skills at doing things quickly? Remember, they were rolling out bombers in Willow Run at the rate of 1 an hour.
Yeah.
During World War II, which is an unprecedented rate, and it was really what helped win the air war during World War II. It may be that sort of skill at mass production that's going to be necessary to make sure that we have a full stock of weaponry going forward. But then, and could American workers, could Detroit workers do that? Sure. These folks are skilled at putting things together and putting things together quickly. The flip side to that question is, do we have the skills to develop a new type of weaponry, these asymmetric weapons, these drones and anti-drone drones and hypersonic missiles and some of the other weaponry that's necessary? Could that come out of Detroit? Could we design and develop that technology and then build it? And I don't know. I don't know anybody who has a clear answer on that.
I also wonder about the ethics involved in all this. We're civilian automakers are asked to, you know, expand into military production. I think of somebody just working at one of, you know, auto plants and then them suddenly being told, oh, by the way, you're going to be making weapons. You know, what if you've got a problem with that? So, you know, I just wonder about the ethical concerns about that.
Well, we have been involved in weapon making as I mentioned, for over a century. Some people will raise the ethical issue, and I'm not going to debate it. I'm not going to get into that argument. There are other people who should do that, or could do that. But the reality is, we still have some connections between the Detroit automakers and the military, and so I think it's a historic tie. So it would be people asking about that today from a very different ethical standpoint than we've had historically. It wasn't all that long ago that the tank command, the tank production here in Michigan for Abrams and the like was run, what was that, by Chrysler, if I remember correctly.
Right.
So historically, it's been fairly recently that Detroit auto workers were rolling out weaponry. So I don't think that there's going to be much pushback on that. There'll be some groups that will, of course. But I don't think it's going to be a big issue.
We have been talking with Paul Eisenstein, editor of Headlight.news, Headlight.news, talking about whether or not Detroit will once again be in this position as being a modern arsenal for democracy. Thank you, Paul. Always fun to talk with you.
Good to talk with you, Marie.
And when we come back, we're going to be talking about these AI data centers. There's going to be another big meeting tonight. We're going to be talking to one of the organizers that's opposing these AI centers when we come back. Lenox Township is bracing for another packed and heated meeting tonight as residents continue pushing back against the township's potential rezoning of roughly 1,500 acres of mostly agricultural land into a new I-94 development district. The district, added late in the township's 2026 master plan, could pave the way for a large-scale data center campus. Joining us is Adriana Welsh, Deputy Secretary of the Board of Citizens for a Better Macomb County. Ariana, I'm so glad you could join us today.
Absolutely. Thank you.
So before we get started into what you're going to be doing there tonight, give us the time and place for this meeting tonight.
So this is going to be at the Lenox Township Hall. Township Hall is located on Gratiot between 30 and 31 Mile. I'd say that it would be hard to find, but we're all farmland, so it's pretty easy to identify when you're on Gratiot there.
All right. And what time does it start?
It starts tonight at 6:30 for the Planning Commission meeting.
All right. You guys are warning us it's going to be a packed house. So your organization, your group, says that information is being kept from the public. Can you tell us what you base that on? What kind of information is being kept from the public?
Unfortunately, pretty much all the communications that have been happening with the developer or developer's representatives. The only way we've been able to find information was through FOIA requests. We've been, I will air quote, reassured by the supervisor in the township that there's no active applications and nothing that's been presented to the township. Yet I just received via FOIA letters from the developer's attorneys stating that they have a lot of time invested into a large-scale campus project and want to make sure that the ordinances are getting passed and what their requests are for changes to the ordinance that's being proposed.
Those of us that live further down towards the city here see 1,500 acres of agricultural land as a large piece of land. So what are the long-term economic, environmental, the infrastructure impacts of converting that much land into a high resource demand district?
That's from what I'm able to gather from basic information, a terrifying thought, because this is something that is far outside of what our community is able to sustain. There's a lot of interest in potential tax revenue and things like that. But the things that aren't being discussed are the environmental impacts, the utility demand.
Yep.
We have water billing deficiencies, according to the township's last audit report, that are concerning, that not only would we potentially have water issues, but we also have a nearly bankrupted water system in Lenox Township on billing. So we're also right in the natural waterways of runoff that goes to Lake St. Clair. So there's, you know, the other environmental concerns that come along with more than just an industrial complex or large scale data center. It's also being planned right next to Pine Tree Acres landfill.
Wow.
So we've got a lot of unknowns, and those unknowns and the deafening silence coming from the elected officials in Lenox Township are creating lots of questions and concerns because they seem to listen to the developers more than they listen to the residents.
Let me play devil's advocate for a second, Ariana, because we've done a lot of reporting on this here at WJR. Look, we mm-hmm. all use our computers every day. We use AI every day, whether you know it or not, you are. We demand that our computers are fast and efficient. And, you know, there's just a lot of technology that I'm talking about normal, ordinary people use every single day. We need to expand our these data centers in order to keep up with that demand. So how do you respond to that?
Absolutely agree with you. However, it should be conducive to what the community can sustain. So if we should not be creating industrial districts like what's being done in Lenox Township or what has recently been discussed in Washington Township. We should not be creating plots for these to be done and built on. It should be accommodated by what is in the community already. And maybe that's more smaller scale, more realistic for the smaller communities. Also, potentially looking into brownfield sites and other sites that may not be developable otherwise in other communities, and maybe utilizing those particular areas.
And you, again, are reiterating the fact that you don't feel your concerns, your group's concerns, the Citizens for Better Macomb County, that you're getting any answers from the elected leadership.
No, we get very disregarded. We have reached out with communications. Extremely generic.
Okay, I'm sorry. You just dropped out on us there, and I was afraid we'd lost you. So you get generic answers back when you ask questions, you're saying?
Yep, generic answers, or the standard answer is just FOIA it.
Yeah, well, I have a lot of experience with FOIA. I know what that really means. So
We get the full extension request. After 5 days, we get a 10-day extension. And then typically, at least in my personal experience, I get bills that are billed at illegal rates. So we're constantly dealing with paywalls and failure to produce information and things like that.
Wow. So you guys have your work cut out for you tonight. How many people are you expecting?
I'd like to see a few hundred people. It would be great. This isn't something that just impacts Lenox Township. This is impacting all the communities around us. And it's really setting a precedent. If it goes through in Lenox Township, it's going to make and pave a way for these developers to go and do the same kind of process in other communities and rural communities too. So it's really important to put our foot down and start demanding the answers and trying to get the answers that we can, but also showing up and having those voices heard.
Ariana Walsh is the Deputy Secretary of the Board, Citizens for Better Macomb County. Thank you so much for talking to us today. I hope we'll have you back on to talk more about this. We appreciate your time today.
Thanks, Marie. I appreciate your time. Have a great day.
Have a great afternoon. All right, joining me here in the big room in the big chair is Ryan Armani, ready to take over. Ryan, we were a little worried about you earlier, wondering how you took the news about Dusty May.
I didn't think I was going to make it, Marie. I thought I was going to have to have you do 4 hours today.
Yeah, right.
But then I think that wouldn't have been fair to you. But look, this is college sports right now. If you're a coach in football or in basketball and you have the opportunity to jump to the pros, you do it, because college sports is just an absolute disaster right now. It is all transactional. Who can make the most money? You're basically on one-year deals. You're re-recruiting everybody that you have, not only on your program, but on everybody else out there. They got to figure something out, because it's getting bad out there.
Well, but this is just fueling that fire, then. If it's all about money, this is what this is. right?
Yeah. I mean, I think Dusty May would have stayed in college if he did not have to deal with transfer portal and NIL. But we live in a capitalist society, so go make the most money you can for all the kids too, I guess. But that's money.
It's a changing world. It is. Certainly a changing world. All right, Ryan Armani is up next here on WJR. Stay with him for the rest of the afternoon. It's a big night tonight with fireworks, so we'll talk more about that, I bet, coming up. Have a great afternoon, everybody. I'm Marie Osborne. I'm in for Paul W. Smith. He's going to be hosting the show tonight on the riverfront. Join him at 7 o'clock.